Hello, and welcome to Two Pews in a Pod. Join us as we explore faith in a modern world at Evangelical Lutheran Church in Frederick, Maryland. Now, here is your host, Pastor Paul Baglios.
I'm Paul Baglios, serving as pastor at Evangelical Lutheran Church.
I'm Daniel Catalano, the Director of Music Ministries here at Evangelical Lutheran Church.
And I'm Vicar Megan Wyant, Director of Youth and Family Ministries here at Evangelical Lutheran Church.
Welcome once again to Two Pews in a Pod. This is the third of four planned episodes around the topic of training, education, and formation of people for public ministry leadership in the church. Last time, previous episode, we talked about learning in our seminary programs that has been so far most impactful for us, most formative for us. And today our topic is going to morph on that. We're going to talk about what in our own ministry leadership experiences we wish perhaps had been addressed more explicitly, more intentionally during our seminary programs. And of course, we don't come at this, the three of us, from the same context, because I finished my seminary degree program decades ago. Daniel and Megan are still in theirs. Nevertheless, the way that I would introduce this topic for our conversation is to say that I think formation for ministry leadership has to attend at least to three areas. I'll call them knowledge, skill, and character. In other words, what do we need to know to function competently in ministry leadership? What do we need to know how to do well to function competently in ministry leadership? And then, what sort of people do we need to be to serve in ministry leadership? And reflecting on my own experience in seminary, I think all three of those have absolutely equal importance. But the third of those, I'll talk about as the character of ministry leaders. I don't recall this being intentionally addressed in my own seminary experience. And I learned, following ordination and call, I learned to grow, I think, at least in my awareness of the importance of character, and in other ways have learned and experienced formation of character for ministry leadership. But seminary didn't explicitly address it. And I would offer that as an observation of critique. I think it's vitally important. And I want to know what you think about the broad question, but I'll invite both of you to respond to what I've just said, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. No, I would agree. I think it's a tricky line, thinking on my own experience in seminary at Church Divinity School of the Pacific,
which I'm wearing the swag, yes, in right? case it doesn't show up clearly.
Right. I think part of the character development, it's just curious about the priority of the seminary, because I think perhaps over the decades and even what we're perhaps experiencing, there's this fine line between the skills and the education portion of it, and then how much we're being, as someone, you know, how we're being formed, which mm-hmm. is the phrase we hear over and over, and the building of character, which I think is super critical for the development. But I would agree with you that I think while there's still some formation going on within my seminary experience, I'm not quite sure working on our own character is an explicit part of it. It may be sort of sprinkled throughout the 4 years or sort of looking at different aspects of it, but I think that may be an area where there could be some growth.
Yeah, I agree, because one of the, when we had thought, when you broached that as being the topic for today, that the biggest thing I see is how we interact with others, right, in healthy ways. Mm-hmm. And the only way we can even have a starting point is to know ourselves and have done work on ourselves. And that is definitely an area where I don't think we do explicit work. During clinical pastoral education, you start. Mm-hmm. I feel like that is a starting point. And because it is built into a program, you're accountable for that growth and really leaning into that. But once that program and once you have completed that unit, I'm not sure it necessarily comes up in any other way. And that to me is like an accountability issue, because once you don't have an assignment or reading, how often do we personally prioritize that, right?
Right. Right. Well, yeah. I think of some projects that I will not go into detail about some of my experiences, but perhaps I'll just say that, you know, some colleagues may have been easier to work with than others. Mm-hmm. And it's not necessarily to think punitively or to criticize them, but I think so much of our own ministry is to work with people. Yeah. And I know within myself that I would want to learn to be a really great colleague and to mm-hmm. work with others and to have that collaborative spirit. So that's, I think, also tricky, because then how do you measure that? Yeah. Oh, well, were you a nice person? Yeah, check yes. mark green. Or you weren't such a nice person. So, you know, so it's, I think there's still some work to develop how to create not an evaluative, but a way to measure that.
It's almost creating a culture, though, that even, you know, within all your courses, within everything that you do, that there is a standard. Because we know when you're in class and having discussions or working on projects, that those dynamics play such an important role, but it's the perfect opportunity to practice active listening, mm-hmm. how to deal with tense conversations when you don't agree, and just caring for one another. We have the opportunity to do that. But like you said, I don't know.
Well, and so much, I think, of I'm on the cusp of my theology class, so it's all really on the front end. But what it means to be church is to work through mm-hmm. all of those tensions that we as Christians, but and particularly as those who are looking to called ministry, we don't act alone. Even monastics historically would still have this network, would still come back. And so much of how we are and to be formed, and then how then we model that is mm-hmm. how are we in ministry? How do we how do we create that space, that environment, I think, as you said, where it's this culture of things will happen. Yes, there will be tension. Yes, there will just be disagreement.
And we're all learning how to do this.
Right,
yes.
And how will we, how will we?
But the standard, too, that we're expected to not just leave class, go, and gripe. You
right,
know?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think where you work through
critical.
It.
Critical. Because I know perhaps you have a similar experience that for times when it does work out, where there has been tension, in the awkward, you've been able to work it out, that those are friendships that are, or connections mm-hmm. that are lasting. I mean, at least for me.
Absolutely.
I've seen that as well.
I think of, as a biblical foundation, I think of Paul's comment in the New Testament, I have become all things to all people. Mm. And he goes on, I think rather carefully, to explain what he means. I will say that I have heard other ministry leaders and seminarians laugh at the mention of that passage as if either Paul's an idiot or anyone who might expect someone to aspire to what Paul says is an idiot. Mm. But what he's talking about is an ability to be with people, to be available to people, to be attentive to people, not with our mind and our heart and our emotions locked on our own needs,
yes,
but on the needs of the person or the people in front of us, always with a mind toward building the community.
Right.
This requires a certain measure of Bishop Gohl in a conversation with me recently was talking about the practical ethic of sacrifice, which does not mean ruining ourselves,
right.
wasting ourselves, mm-hmm. Inviting all manner of mistreatment or abuse right. upon ourselves. But it does mean a willingness and a capacity to extend ourselves right. for the sake of others,
yes.
for their growth in Christ, for their growth in the gospel. And there's a sort of wondrous irony or paradox about this, that in order to be fully present as whole human beings to other people, we also have to be able to get ourselves out of the way.
Mm. Yes.
We are called to be bearers and embodiments of Christ, as are all baptized yes. disciples. Mm. Those who are ordained have a responsibility to ensure that attention and that growth within the faith community. And it means a capacity to lay aside one's own preferences, one's own proclivities, one's own whims. And this comes down to, I'm going to use two words that are common in conversations about this, and I'm anticipating. I'm going to use one of your words
I knew
it was going to come up. But it's a difference between a sense of entitlement and a truly formed authenticity.
Mm. Authenticity, yeah, by the way. Let's make that clear.
Daniel and I have been talking about that a lot.
not the first. Yeah, right. Yeah, let's.
Yeah, the authenticity.
Yeah, let's. Yeah, right. That's what I mean. Let's make that clear.
Daniel has been saying he finds himself authentically entitled.
Yeah, entitled. That's my right. But
you and I have been speaking a lot about authenticity, and I want you to say more about that with Megan and I.
Well, so to your point, I think as well, looking at what the role of the ordained, which, you know, can have other implications, but for me also self-sacrificing, but also the care that you're given to yourself. When I hear of you talk about that, and I think this ties in as well to being authentic, that really being in tune with your own self and your own call. We've talked before about how it's not just whatever they want and sort of throwing yourself down, but also being secure within who you are, how you've been formed into this role, and letting that be the space so that you can then work with others. It's really challenging to be open and mm-hmm. honest and to hear others when you yourself are dealing with things that you're not grounded in. Mm-hmm. And so that level of authenticity, I know it's often misused or, you know, used quite frequently, but the self-care, but really tending to your own authentic sense of self and where you fit into God's kingdom, I think that's so critical, because if you don't have that, or if you are not actively working on where you're settled or where you feel your call in ministry is, how does ministry work? It begs a really interesting question. So it ties back to what you said earlier, and then for me, being authentic in a true sense of how your calling is just, it's becoming more and more important for me.
And I think it would be a fair statement of at least part of what you mean when you speak about being authentic to say this call, this responsibility, this investment of public leadership responsibility in the community is not only something I do, it's something I am, mm-hmm. that I'm not posing.
Right.
I'm not merely playing a role that I don't fully inhabit mentally, spiritually, emotionally.
Right.
I'm living out of a sense of self yeah. as one called to this. I want to pick up on your sermon
yeah.
recently here at ELC, Megan, because one of the many memorable lines of your sermon is, we are not imposters.
Mm.
And I know you were addressing the larger community in our call as disciples, but that has bearing as well for those who are called to public leadership of the disciple community.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That we have a sense of ourselves as not imposters.
Right.
We're not faking it.
I mean, we have to make it a part of, like you said, like your identity. And throughout seminary, it's really finding your voice. And it has to be authentic. It has to be the true you. Because when we do play, feel like we're playing a part, or we see, you know, I think sometimes it's easy to get wrapped into, oh, there's a pastor who I really like, and I want to be just like them. But your voice and the message you have is uniquely yours, and that's what we need to hear. That's what you have to, and that's the invitation in seminary, is to really play around and figure out what is your voice, what is, you know, where do you feel you're being called, and where are your edges, and you have to be open, because you just never know. You never know. There are so many things that I've stepped into thinking I'm going to absolutely be terrible at this, and then being happily surprised, or vice versa. Mm-hmm. Things that I thought would be easy were much more difficult.
Mm-hmm. But think of the long haul of ministry, because I know we're sort of on this like precipice of starting more. And it's curious how faking it takes a lot of energy. I think about within a choir sense, these long pieces like Handel's Messiah, which depending on tempo can be, you know, 2 hours and 30 minutes, or Mozart's Requiem. I mean, these long things. And what do the conductors tell? Sing well, sing authentically, sing as you don't bolster your voice so that you're this grandiose voice,
right?
Because in, you know, 6 minutes, you're going to be, and we're going to need more from you. So I think that also ties in with the authentic self-care, self-awareness that, like, you only need to be yourself. Because if you're, surviving, well, probably not the right word, but surviving ministry, or thriving in ministry.
There you go.
That's what I meant to say. We'll edit all that out. But the thriving in ministry, I think, can really work if you're you, because if you're trying to sort of put on someone else, or you're trying to, you know, I want to be like that preacher, it's going to take a lot of energy to be them and not to be you.
And people are going to see through that, and your ability to care and minister for them is going to be affected by that every time. Yeah.
You used the word edges a moment ago. And I'm curious to know, I think I know the answer to this question also for you, but I'm not sure.
Ooh.
I don't know that you and I have ever talked about this. One of the things that is currently an expectation of Lutheran seminary programs that was not at all when I was in my degree program in the early 1980s was that all people preparing for ministry leadership would be in spiritual formation, working with a spiritual director. I became aware of that concept and that teaching later in life, and I have now, for nearly the past 12 years, 11 and a half, I've been working with a spiritual director. And finally taking the step to do that was prompted by a comment that I heard a bishop say, that he would not consider anyone who was seeking a call in the synod that he served who was not in spiritual direction. Do you have a
spirit? I actually do not, no.
Is that not
a It is not a hard and fast requirement. They have a spiritual formation requirement, and you have to, and it involves, you could have a spiritual director. It gives you a list of different things that you can do.
And I'll describe that I meet once a month with mine by phone.
Right.
She is in Nebraska.
Yes. Yeah.
And one of the ways that I might describe what is the work she does with me is to help heighten my awareness of my own edges and my willingness and effective capacity to sand them down so that they don't become points of abrasion in relationship with other people.
Yes.
And I know you've spoken to me about being in spiritual direction.
Right. Well, and so there's been a number of revisions done by the Episcopal Diocese of Maryland where what was once a recommendation is now a requirement that even before you start at the very early stages, you must have a spiritual director. Some bishops, and I would have to check some of this. Some bishops require by the time you are ordained, you are in good standing with a spiritual director and a therapist, non-negotiable, mm-hmm. which I think mm-hmm. at first yeah. was like, oh, that seems very, and I'm like, oh no, like that,
right, that's a part of the
it's self-care. Just a part mm-hmm. of, just yeah. to at least be in some sort of communication. So I agree. I think it's a pretty critical point because I try to meet at least once a month with mine. And it's almost, it's very monastic in that way.
Yeah.
There's monastic language about the rough edges. Mm-hmm. And they talk about if you have this sort of bag of rough rocks and you stick them in a bag together and they're rubbing together and they're doing all this, eventually they become smoothed. And I think that is that ecclesiological understanding of church, which is just the fancy,
yeah.
it's just how church is church and how community is community. And I think we're all, we all need each other in that way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, again, we are grateful if you have joined us listening or watching. Our next episode, part four in this four-part series, we will have a guest, a member of this congregation, and we will introduce that person at the start of the episode. I'm Paul Baglios.
I'm Megan Wyant.
And I'm Daniel Catalano.
Thank you.
This has been Two Pews in a Pod, a podcast hosted by the lead pastor of Evangelical Lutheran Church in Frederick, Maryland. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.